should not enter our land. So let me use the picture of the delegate of Frederick. Well, firstly, let me jump to apologies, honorable members.
And so, I think, Chairperson, we have received three apologies as Mr. Kwankwa, Mr. Khale, and Mr. Kutereza.
Honorable members, those are the apologies of honorable chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to be debating, so I don't know where to have a time.
Okay. Honorable members, these are the apologies. Hopefully they are captured by the House. Let me give this opportunity, Treasury, to introduce head delegate so that we know who will be laying now.
And chapter 6 of the budget review, Annexure W1, which is an annexure in the budget. quite after one of the things that came to us today in the beginning of revenue that we believe allows for the responsiveness of the funding towards enabling EAM. So we have also completed the methodology for making changes, adjustments that we have made in the current, so we'll reflect on that. So LSC has also recommended that we need to enhance municipal revenue in those municipalities that really have got a strong potential, and then be able to create space to make sure that more funding can be directed to the municipalities that have got weak revenue base. So we want to be able to say that that is exactly what we are doing. The municipal fiscal powers and function amendment bill is up now for comments, and it will soon be coming to the House to be decided on. And that is the act that is meant to also start improving revenue enhancement through better formalizing what we call the revenue tax, which is a payment that I can do for infrastructure that benefits the environment. So the steeper reduction in the revenue transfer also does reflect this logic of beginning to say the urban environment stronger revenue base and being enabled through environmental incentives and through the update that we have made in the borrowing policy and some other initiatives that we are putting in place so that then they can still continue to contribute to growth and create a better platform for growth. So in terms of the context informs the need or forms the basis of the dream of revenue. So the first thing that we want to point out is a weak economic outlook. So the GDP is was expected to grow by 1.9% in 2020 and 1.3% in 2021 and 1.6% in 2022. Of course, now with the coronavirus and all that, the possibility that we can be worse off is not far from us. So, but what is important is to realize that if we don't do well and the economy is not growing, that has got direct impact on our ability to collect revenue, to collect taxes, that then have impact in terms of how much we can be able to spend. So in the current year, we are projecting that we will under-collect in terms of how much we budgeted by almost 3.3 billion. So this is the revision that we have made downward on the revenue estimate for 1920 that's represented in the budget. So on the one hand, debt is not projected to stabilize over the medium term. And debt service costs actually now absorb about 2.2 billion. And I think what is important to realize is that the local government income share is actually around 2 billion. So how much we actually under-collected is almost like the amount that we could actually bought at the local government income share with. So holding the fiscal deterioration requires a combination of continuous spending restraint, faster economic growth, and later to contain the financial demands from the distressed state-owned companies. And I think what the budget also tries to do, I think it tries to address this issue, particularly in terms of the training spending, so that it's more in line with our growth, economic growth, and also enables us to still try to stimulate the economy. So how does the budget respond to this context? So the first step was to look at how we adjust spending. So the non-interest spending was reduced by almost 1.1 billion over the 3 years on TF. So this reduction to the income, so this is like the net reduction. So this reduction to the income that we made is around 1 billion. Which includes an estimated reduction of 1.2 billion on the wage bill for both national and provincial and national public think what is important is to realize that this was a difficult effort of trade-off that a government had to make in the decision of the region. While we need to make large reductions, but also the need to make sure that we don't impact negatively on the citizens in Zimbabwe. So what we're reflecting here is that with regards to the provinces and local government, of course they were affected by the reduction. So, but how do we make it? So, with regards to services that provinces offer, education, health, and education, services that goes to local government also, Ikuja will share what's affected. However, the reduction that were made to the chair were actually relatively very small, and they can be covered if we improve education. Because one of the beautiful things about this time that we are in, we hope that it will then make government to be much more efficient so that the amount can go much better than it has been doing up to now. So where the country did become, so we will see that the budget still grows by modernization, which actually tells you that in terms of our projections in the MTF, we are projecting to still spend way much more than the economy can afford. Right. If the economy is growing by less than 1% and our spending grows by way of 8%, then definitely there was improvement. There is a problem. So I think that's what that should be reflected by the cap. So the conditional grants were reduced, and part of those that were reduced were infrastructure grants, of course, which means that we'll probably lower the rate in which we deliver. But I still also believe that efficiency can still take us a bit far, even in infrastructure, given how inefficient we are still are in how we are doing our infrastructure. So this slide reflects the revenue, you know, the division of revenue between the three spheres of government and how we are providing for this sector to come. So when you look at this, you see that the main budget expenditure should grow by almost like that. However, with regards to provincial allocations, we are still growing the provincial allocations by more than inflation. So if we have changed growing by almost 6.3% for provinces, for local governments, we have changed to growing by about 9.2%. So the growth is still more than what the country is actually generating in terms of the revenue from tax. Which we believe that it is still the growth that will allow the sustaining of services, even though we could have them at a much higher level if the amount is not actually reduced given the environment we are in. So the debt service cost growing at an average of around 12.3% do outpace our other spending, is that correct? And the that when you look at the trend from 2000-2008, where we had quite significant growth in broken boundary condition standards, even though we have cut them much deeper and they are growing much lesser compared to the existing share, but you look at that the levels are still at a much higher level relative to the increases that we had, in the previous years around 2013 and so. So we did not, so what we're saying is that we are not yet on austerity, but actually the allocations are still quite high, that if we are efficient, we must be able to maintain the level of services at least in terms of the return. So how should we, what was the criteria that we used for reducing the return grant? So this was one of the things that we asked to do. So we looked at past spending trends and performance. So these are the combination of three things that we looked at. And we also looked at whether they are funding salaries or medicines or food. So which means those grants that were funding those were not cut. So whether there has been significant real growth in the allocation there isn't yet. So some of the funds like in assessment saw a huge amount of growth in the recent years. Then there has been a much deeper cut, but still we still see real growth and in the allocation of that grant. So the large reductions were also made to grants in the area and municipalities, which we believe have got better capacity to offset that cut in terms of other revenue from their own sources, which we are also working with them to increase or to optimize. So we also want to reflect on the redistributional impact of the division of revenue. You know, there's always the issues about whether the division of revenue is fair to the poorer provinces, to the poorer areas, to the poorer municipalities. So what we are reflecting here is that the test base is very, very evident. You know, where you are getting most of the test. So it's very evident, right? But in terms of how we are allocating, so we are showing that the allocations are quite redistributed. You know, while for instance in Gauteng, when you look at central income tax, it's three times much higher that we get from compared to the same year. But when you look at the graph there, you can see that if they take share of the allocation for individual share for different grants in total, it's almost 40% higher than Gauteng. So you also look at the other graph underneath in the municipalities that while we are getting the greater share from or of the tax from the urban municipalities, but the per capita share of the poorer municipalities is more than twice what the metros, for instance, are getting. So you can see that it's actually increasing in relation to the potential for the spaces after they made their own general. So we really believe for this that we are trying to be very realistic, acknowledging that other territories do not have a strong revenue base and yet the demand for services are much higher in those areas. So the division of revenue attempts to actually address that problem. So the other issue has been about how we are responding towards this phenomena of the crisis in municipalities that in a way often arises from their changing of unfunded budget, that they start a year planning to spend more money than we actually have. So that's what unfunded budget means. So what we have done is to step up efforts in actually enforcement. Because what we've already been doing together with the provincial treasurers would be to evaluate the budget. Like now, when they give the budget in March, we will have time to engage with those budgets, benchmark them, and then give them comments that they need to take in their contracts. So now what we have seen is that in spite of those comments actually stating that the budget could be unfunded, it's usually tabled as that. So spending, you are spending with what you have. It is a culture that we are trying to encourage in local government so that it's in line with what we are doing in the rest of government. So now there's a system in the municipalities that couldn't get their budget funded. These are the municipalities that have got huge debt for balances and for instance. So what we said to these municipalities is that we acknowledge that you may not have your budget in 1 year funded to take account of this debt. And some of them may not still be able to even pay that. But we're saying that you need to get your budget to make sure that you are paying for the current bill so that we don't budget not to pay the debt that you're consuming at the same time. So I think that is what we've got those municipalities that, and that is what we are planning to reinforce in the budget now for 2020 to make sure that even those municipalities that are not able to get their budget fully funded because of the huge debt that they have, that they are able to budget for the current. Then we can look at how we deal with the historical debt that they're actually not able to spend into account. But I think what is important is restoring the culture of paying for services consumed. So I think that is the system that we are working on now with all the collective that we are working with. So we hope this lays a better foundation for better and more efficient and responsible spending at the local level. So the other part that we have applied our minds on is how we improve the scale, the pace, and the efficiency of investment in our urban spaces. So remember, we have said that there's great potential there, there's greater need there to have a better platform where our infrastructure is able to hold the economy base that is actually in those areas where we need money to actually be able to subsidize those other areas where there is no strong economy base. So we have introduced a reform that will begin to address this whole issue of weak project planning, because it is the biggest constraint that actually results in even understanding. Because remember, even though we are receiving the grant, but you will know that at the end of the year, we'll still show that the grants are still under effect, right? So there is a problem. And this problem, of course, is not just a problem of municipalities, the whole government. So the whole introduction of infrastructure fund concept, part of it is really about how the government and public sector improve in actually creating a pipeline of well-conceived projects that actually can look at blended finance. So we are looking at municipalities, particularly with regard to the network, being able to start creating the capacity to actually build the project pipeline of well-funded, well-conceptualized projects that are integrated and well-targeted to actually begin to impact on structural transformation. So one of the grants that is a very small grant, Integrated City Development Grant, it's about 300 million or so. We have said in that grant, we want half of it to be used to establish this capacity in this network. And then we want to leverage their own efforts also in establishing that capacity. But we also want to make sure that there is a criteria for eligibility, because we want to entrench good practices in terms of financial management skills, and in terms of good finance, good asset management. So hence, we want them to adopt the specific infrastructure development management system, which is a system that we kind of worked with them in the past 3 years. Now we are saying it's time to adopt so that we have got proper management of your assets. And then you also create a much more transparent, authorizing environment for the project that actually works in the system. So the approval of project committee that will function to authorize the project is quite important. And also, we want to see them, you know, funding, co-financing their contribution in terms of developing this capacity. So this is the reform that we are introducing with regards to enhancing our capacity to invest in this space.
Thank you. What are we doing from stepping through the changes to the division of labor involved and the really focused division of roles here, referring to the actual clauses that you have, and also the provincial fiscal framework, and then even the conclusion of the local and fiscal framework. The division of revenue involved, because of the regulatory legislation and it's issued every year, what
now she's getting into explain but the annexion that the acting DG spoke about before would draw one interest because it is where from then the minister is responding to both our comments in the North proposal and also the Australian proposal, wherein there is a regime of that is that would be able to, I'm not sure what I'm thinking about, sorry. Sort of.
Approved.
Been there,
money available for that, and it's allocated to building and infantile 1-3 schools. Then there's also specific provision for gender-based violence, and that is targeting non-profit organization in 27 priority districts that's struggling with that. And then there's also social worker support, and that is also specifically targeted to areas where there's high violence, substance abuse, and issues affecting children. And then the last point on this slide that I would like to make, we are currently busy, together with provincial treasuries and other national departments and other relevant stakeholders such as that effect, to review the provincial equitable share formula, and we'll inform the community every time we make a change. Then with regards to changes to provincial conditional grants, again, it's targeting key priority areas that is very critical to address. One of those are early childhood development. And what the additional provision caters for is to improve the per child day subsidy from 15 rand in 2019-20 to 18.57 rand by 2022-23, which is, if you really think about it, it's really important to fix the underfunding in that sector. Then with regard to health grants, and that again has already touched on that, just to indicate that, for example, one of the things that's been done to improve the allocation is that a number of health conditional grants supported HR, and those should now be pulled together in one new conditional grant, which is called the Statutory Human Resources Training and Development Grant. And then there's also another important change is to make provision for provinces in Eastern Cape and Southern Mpumalanga Northwest. There's some money being spent in there to enable them to start providing tertiary hospital services, which is very important, and it will appear to things such as cancer, you know, treating patients with cancer, heart, and things like that. And then there's also a new quality improvement allocation in the NHI indirect grant, and that is to enable facilities to be ready for NHI accreditation. You must meet certain criteria, or facility must meet certain criteria. If it doesn't meet those criteria, it will not be able to participate in the NHI. So it's just starting there. And then some of the money, and so we've explained this in the adjustment budget as well, some money of the comprehensive agriculture support program is also directed towards improved animal testing and disease control. If we can't export our products, then killing the market. So it's very important that we support those initiatives as well.
Thank you, Winnie. I'll be very quick, Chair. Fortunately, I think members understand, thanks to the training session that we did just before the budget was tabled, how the equitable share formulas work. So this slide just gives you the updates on what the allocations are this year. So you might remember that that the household subsidy was about 406 rand per day. Last year, it's now 435 rand, so it's been increased, and the number of households that have funds are allocated increases to 10.4 million this year, and by the end of the MTEP, it'll grow to promote the use of greater non-grant capital investment, in other words, investment from the city's own resources in more integrated development. We announced in the MTDDS that three cities would be suspended from the public transport network grant, which was a severely underperforming grant. These are three cities, Buffalo City, Mbuzi and Mbombela, that have not launched any services, so no services are being disrupted as a result of the suspension, and in fact they're not even close to launching services anytime soon. And then lastly, there is a total of $750 million in next in 2020-21 that is reprioritized for sanitation infrastructure in the Bar River system. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, that was the presentation from Brenda in regards to the division of River Union. Because you've warned us now, the presentation is extensive, you need more time. Perhaps the remaining time will be for you to then engage on the presentation. And let me start noting hands from the members. Many of the cities are not spending, they are even billions of them. So
Chairperson and apology for being late. I just wanted to know two things. Are we going to justify the budget that we allocated to SSA where there's many other priorities and needs? Particularly for us, is that to justify this amount that we're continuing allocating to SSA? Whilst I think the previous the member asked about how do we justify less spending that we do in the poor. We know we said not for the poor. I'm not sure how government can justify that. And then the other question I would like to ask on the 750 million rand for the regional block infrastructure, I think it's the Vaal River. I just wanted to know, I think the African Defence Force, African Defence Force is currently assisting there. So I'd like to know, is that money going back to the department? Is it going via tenders, normal tenders? Or are we going to have an implementing agent or consultant? Because I think if it just goes back to the department, we might end up with the same situation and not able to spend that money and complete the project. So just like clarity on that. Was the money given under condition or conditions? Or is it just going back to the department?
Thank you. The honourable was Matthias.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions myself, those that were tried by honourable members. I will just underscore them where I think that maybe I need to add some more substance to it. The first one is just a observation, but I just want a response to that. In terms of our GDP forecast, is there a process that we use to be able to reach an estimate? Or is there a particular authority that we align ourselves to? The reason I'm asking is that the Reserve Bank has projected 1.2%. The IMF 0.8%. The World Bank 0.9%. And you yourself are also saying 0.9. Are you aligning yourself with the World Bank, or is there a particular formula that has led you to end up with a 0.9? I just also want to find out, Chair, on the approach to the slowing economy that we are facing. I find it peculiar that we are saying that we are going to restrain spending and achieve faster economic growth. I'm not an economist, but I think that when faced with a slowing down economy, there should be some sort of economic stimulation via expenditure, either by government or by the private sector. And interestingly, I was watching the 405. J.J. Sabani speaks about the hoard of cash that the private sector has in their bank account. They are not spending it in the economy. So it's a challenge. If government is not spending, the private sector is not spending, where will the economic growth come from? And Honorable Mo is correct to say that when we are cutting spending, it will have a negative effect to job creation and infrastructure development. I just want to find out if whether there's a deliberate attempt, or maybe we consider a counter-fiscal fiscal policy and we think that no, not necessarily at this point in time, will restrain the hope for economic growth. And then couple to that check, just to check if whether, based on this perception that the private sector is not playing ball in assisting the economy to grow, in our approach, do you consider measures that will stimulate interest from the private sector? Because I know that you've been holding talks as government and the private sector, but I'm yet to see tangible outcomes in terms of how then do we stimulate economic participation by this private sector in generation of new investment opportunities and maybe spreading of their President, I come from the Chinese municipality about 1 second. With the implementation of the municipal salary shadow account, National Secretary has deployed resources there, permanent sitting in the Department of Finance, to ensure that this system is implemented in a manner that will be compliant with federal standards. But this is just a process. It has no direct revenue or direct impact on the guy on the street. It's how accounting should be done. Now, I link this with page 19, where we are withholding funds from Buffalo City, Sundubu, and Bombay. Correct, comrade, member through you, Chair. Bombay is for the Elizabeth, eh?
No.
It's London.
Never.
Oh, okay, no, I'm lost there.
It
is London. Why I'm asking this is there have been one speech where DRT was being attempted, and there were no buses. 3 years down the line, I went back in the same seat. I think it's in the same case. That's why I'm asking whether I was there first in the case earlier. And I asked, but why are there no buses here? 3 years down the line, this infrastructure is here. And they said, no, it's failing. Treasury took away the money. So now, my question is, the impact of the quality, to the quality of life of the residents there, and the cost of the infrastructure that has been put by this city, has it been taken into account? Because I think that any construction interrupts the way of life, and if you're going to have bus stations, calling off roads, and as National Treasury, we just involve funds because it's delayed. What are we saying about costs that are involved in a particular area? Hence, I'm asking, can we capacitate these municipalities unlike the voting funds? Because the voting on for funds has a direct impact on how our people live on their daily basis. I will not touch on the issue of metros. I think Honorable Modi just said to that. The only thing I'm concerned about is that it seems as if we want to ask it, but we're adding too much red tape. In terms of, you must have this, you must have that, you must have that. Maybe the question that I would ask is, which metros do you think will qualify for this particular canalization of page taking? Because I'm concerned that we are targeting metros. And our experience is that the less disadvantaged or the most disadvantaged municipalities are districts and local. And our view, or my view personally, would be that those are the municipalities levels that we should focus on, unlike the metros. Yeah, I'll pause the chair by saying that the changes to the bill are welcome, and I think that they are positive that we have this. A great deal with a great area in terms of the administration of this fund. But I think it will also be important that this particular amendment to the bill should be communicated in a manner that also brings education to those that are going to implement it. Because already there are grants that have been taken back by treasurers. They are failing to implement at least. So will this new changes to the bill be able to assist? Will the people that are implementing be able to understand them? I gave an example yesterday in another discussion about the UFDG grant. And in this presentation, we are speaking about settlements that can be identified and those grants be used in those particular settlements. I gave an example of 2 mega projects in housing. They are unable to kick off the ground because there are no buses. The same municipalities are using UFDG grants and human settlement development grant, and they speak to the core of making those particular mega projects, which these specific human settlements to succeed. So I'll
get people to understand, including all that South Africans, on when we say 15.6% of the budget is actually to debt, and how do we avoid that particular debt? Because for me, this debt service fund is actually an interest to on slide six, on the 24 billion for critical policy priority, I want to find out if the South African Express part of it, because we have not had a clear intention of the breakdown. The one on slide 7 that would be linked to the issues raised by Honorable Matapa about the delay or the rollout of some of the projects like your DRT in Sulunzi and Bafarosiki and Bombela. I want to know, is there no potential for cost escalation where you then have a project that was supposed to be X million amount, which would then be delayed or the suspended, and at a later stage with that a project that to be continued with, then the cost is escalated. The other one is on slide, no, on slide 8. I think that I'm going to mention it. Slide 12, on the municipalities, especially when you explains that the household transfer to local government. I want to know, does these municipalities, which are seen as the rural and poor, have the capacity to spend that allocation that is being given to those municipalities? Because despite this additional push or subsidy for the municipalities, these municipalities still remain those that have got serious challenges to service delivery. The 66 municipalities that have unfunded budget. I just want to find out, is it possible for you to break down these 66 for us? Are these some of the municipalities that are still owning the platform and work of all? Because I want to know where exactly are these municipalities? Where are they? What are their basic challenges over and above the fact that they might be starting the year playing without necessarily having the resources? Then on slide 13, you speak about big project planning being a big constraint. Is there capacity building that is put in place so that the project planning can improve in many of our municipalities and provinces? Then slide 15, the issue of municipalities. I'm happy for that change, for that requirement, that provinces should consult municipalities. Because if the SOPAS, if the budget issues of the MSPs, you hear mention of projects that are going to happen, like the president of SALTA would say, at a local government space. But the local leader would hear about that first time when they hear in that particular issue. And then it creates problems in the communities, because communities have heard it being mentioned, but the delivery is not happening because the necessary planning has not happened. There's not even space in the municipality for the human settlement that might have been announced, or the house that might have been allocated, or even the electrification. Yesterday I was telling Honorable Matapa that there's an area in housing, in Tshwane, in Mamelodi, which in terms of the INEP mapping was identified as unelectrifiable because of the way the settlement is. The community there demands electricity. But unfortunately, they cannot be provided with electricity because of the way the community is. It's almost like here in the Western Cape with your community and wherever, when people are just
living on top of each other, and they want particular sort of. So I think it is that one for me actually speaks to the challenges that are there. I also want to applaud the additions to the formula, which includes the funds for sanitary dignity, the gender-based violence support, and the social work support, because both, I mean, our communities have got still challenges of social ill. We do need social workers, but we don't have the breakdown on the province, and it would be important for us to know those 27 priority districts as per the district model. And when then do we anticipate the national rollout of this approach? I have to mention that healthcare, promoting improvement in health services in rural provinces. You mentioned Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Free State, Eastern Cape. I didn't hear you mention the Northern Cape. And I know for sure the Northern Cape has only one provincial hospital, which is the now Robert Mangabe Joso Mukwe Hospital in Kimberley. And you would know the challenges that the vastness of that problem has. And for many years, that province has been, even the time it was called the National Social Services Grant, it never used to come as a Northern Cape. So it's important that we get to know, for a province like Northern Cape in particular, there's no secondary level service care other than in the hospital. What about those people who come from Namagwa? There's a place called Onsiepkan. The referral pathways in that province are so difficult that for a pregnant woman who is undergoing serious maternal challenges, they've got to be referred from Colesberg to DR, from DR then to Kimberley. What then do you anticipate this to be happening in a province like the Northern Cape? Then I'm happy also on the funds which are set for improved animal testing, because it is important that our people know that the meat that they eat is healthy, and they especially those who love to have their protein from the animal sources. Municipal infrastructure grants. The specialized wage vehicles, thank you very much for that approach. But what about the water? The biggest challenge that is also there in municipality is water tankers. And you would know that many of our communities, we're sitting with the challenges in Kwakwa right now. We're sitting with the challenges in Hammanskraal. We're sitting with challenges I can mention all over. And the water tankers approach, there was an indication given that some of these service providers go and take water that is not even properly filtered for human consumption and delivered to people. What about making it possible that it's one of those that could benefit from this approach in the municipal infrastructure plan? And also the thing about being on a requirement for transversal contracts, so as to avoid the corruption that the water situation has created. Public transport network, yes, I raise the issue of the escalation, but what about the work that has been done so far? What about vandalization? Because there's a potential for vandalization of the work that has already been done. So, and also, what is the role of the Department of Transport as well as the Department of Quokka in supporting these municipalities to make sure that this particular project continues? The additional funds for the government. When will this be done on a nationwide approach? For me, that is what I want to raise, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the team of National Treasury for enlightening us about this.
Honorable Temple, thank you, Chairperson. That I said before, it's a
locked into the consistently unused funds, and then took such funds for better use in another court. Is it? But you know, this terminology of we have cut, we have reduced, it is now, this budget is now termed an austerity budget, which I personally believe from a layman point of view, it is not. That is because of the terminology you, as treasurer, have already decided to use. I don't know why. Take for instance, Chair, if you go to slide 9, let's go to slide 9. You know that table? I said I am very late when it comes to finance. I'm just looking at the table from an ordinary layman's perspective. It's a horrible document. It just goes. So, why would you then talk in that table of reduction? Why would you then talk of cutting? Let me pass check. Perhaps I'll score it into this. Chair, also, there are I think it's in your response, slide 17. Yes, no. It is a change. And here we also have a change. I've just picked on two sides, slide 13 and 98. Just two of them. You go to the one talking about the new quality improvement activity, including an HR indirect grant, that's slide 17. And the other one would be one of the most talking to this one, the additional fund for the value of the human application. Have you, as National Treasurer, assessed the capacity to spend? Or are we not going to see ourselves letting into the same kind of a challenge where we begin to, because I said appreciate that you have upped the bar there, you have made action, though for some of the funds there change are talking to the president in action, and we have to appreciate that National Treasury has begun to respond to what the president is actually, you know, telling the country. But now, have you had the capacity to spend? Aren't you going to see a situation where the very same funds have to come back because they are not spending? Aren't you going to see a situation where the same funds, they will have to come here on a report with applications for rollovers because of the state of readiness in terms of business plan and all that, where you'd be told that they're not ready to spend that money allocated. I just picked on those two slides and they both would have won an extra rate. Other questions generally from the head of trade. Slide 26. On slide 26, check. Okay, this one, that was one check I spoke of the minister's response to recommend. There are specific recommendations which on slide 26 that left. Where we were emphatic on National Treasurer engaging extensively with FSFI before we see the final product of, I believe, the budget national interest than a response which is like practical. I raised this question in the light of the fact that FFC hasn't come back to us in any form where they say we are now satisfied that our recommendations to national treasury have been taken heed of. Perhaps if we could, when the government responses to their spirit recommendations related to the decision of the revenue are provided in part 3, blah, 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 blah. If we could have, because our responsibility as a committee is also to go back to FFC to say, look, FFC, their realization of what we have been crying out about. If you can, as you respond, just elaborate a little with some example, one or two, of such recommendations which you have actually taken seriously from both the FFC and our side. That's the last one, Chair, would be, if not on this one, Chair, I've taken a view of a medical. Your flight 40 and flight 41. If you can, in a snap of a minute, talk to us, just make a comparative study of your distribution to provinces. And once more, we have used technology that I'm not presenting of production when it comes to slide 41. I've listed that just three slide 41. Education infrastructure, whatever. Human development, development, and lastly, provincial goals, they are talking to the majority of South Africans work when you are talking education infrastructure. Remember, only yesterday's day, you know, everybody was talking about the digital claim, spending of the math schools and all and all and all. The human settlement development, even there, there's a large gap, you know. Your provincial roads maintenance, where you have got roads which are not trustable, where you have got roads which are actually, you know, carriage roads, if one can say. They are the ones which are actually killing our people, particularly in the Cape. Where, you know, government has made promises about the reapplication of such roads, but nothing has happened to date. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I think members have covered a quite wide range of issues that we want to receive some response from the Treasurer. But maybe before I give you, there is this. I always ask myself or want to hear one day as you make this presentation, because you know, it's a decision and it's repeatedly being said each and every quarter. The issue of, you know, building small business, in particular, I want to make a reference to cooperatives, because now the transfer of the economy can only be felt and be take place once the poor people have access to, you know, better production level and through the implementation of such kinds of eradication of patent system. Where do I read easily that this thing is covered now this year and finally we're going to ban it now? Yes, I'm happy that when it comes to health, at least there is something that is quite encouraging to make additional assistance to ensuring that health is not suffering when it comes to safety delivery because of major decisions, which includes rolling out of national health insurance. Yeah, so on the small municipalities that do not have income, I think I'm covered. Let me give you that opportunity.
Okay, thank you very much. The USCG needs
don't have capacity, how come you don't have capacity? When actually the law provides for you to actually have the right capacity of what structures in place. So I think for me that actually would become very, very important. Otherwise, it actually would be impossible to assume that a treasurer, we can build capacity across 40 departments, 90 departments in province, 12% in the strategies, on all the sectors of government that actually operate. I think that's going to be very, very difficult. So what are we doing to actually support in terms of capacity building? So we have new initiatives in terms of that. Part of it is actually the applications that we are actually giving to various departments like COMCA and NISA, which has got about 100 million per year, that is actually meant to support infrastructure heroes. And we also, from the finance point of view, we also are implementing quite a number of initiatives in terms of municipal financial improvement program. And also the initiatives that we have started to actually try to enforce the law in terms of compliance with the law. Because we are also of the view that some of the decisions that we have made is not because there is no capacity. It's really the choice that we have made and disrespecting the actual rule of law. Because if you're going to decide to actually take an unfunded budget, when you know we have assessed this budget, we have written it in black and white because the budget is unfunded, but it's still being tabled. Right? So that's the choice the decisions that are taking today to break the law. And that is why, as you say, there has to be consequences so that the rule of law can actually be respected. So I think we are trying to balance in terms of enforcement and in terms of also support taking time. Because otherwise, I think we have to say that because we are spending so much money, we are spending so much money, but still, we still feel that there is no compliance because we are always just keeping the carrot and there is no stick. And what we are trying to pull now is the stick together with the carrot, and we hope that we can go somewhere and also be supported in this effort to be able to do that. So I think that's really the area on capacity building, which and how we deal with this unfunded budget. And I think that the other question has to do with whether we, how do we hope to get more efficiency and spending when there are challenges in municipalities and everywhere else in government. So, and I think here also there is quite a big effort that is being done across government that is also led by the president in many ways. Particularly with regards to infrastructure. So the infrastructure challenges in terms of the level of capacity to plan, the level of capacity to package the projects and stuff, is something that has been identified as a major issue across the whole of government. So I think that is why from the citizens, there is also quite an effort to actually have capacity that to coordinate also the whole of government and kind of infuse the best practices in terms of how we actually plan and support. And this is entered around the district development model. So what we are putting in place here for the metros is really around realizing that with metros, we cannot establish a process whereby we are saying somebody somewhere is going to plan for you, is going to manage the project for you. Because we believe that they are so big and that the scale of investment, if they can get their capacity where, it will be so huge and they will be able also to leverage from their own. So that is why we are saying the approach needs to be differentiated in terms of how do we deal with the potentially capacitated municipalities like your district and how do we deal with those that are under the district. So the district model is actually trying to differentiate. So there is going to be quite a big effort that is driven by COPCA. That is actually establishing capability to support this municipalities, including working with DSA, looking at how to get project preparation to actually happen in the rest of the municipality. So part of it is that for the networks, we are saying we need to incentivize them to actually do the right thing because they have got capability and potential to do so. So the incentive to ensure that there is good governance, which is the basic requirement that we are requiring here, is that, you know, there must be some good financial
And when we show reductions in the four-year projection. So we don't use, so we say for the 2019 budget is for 2019-20, 2020-21, 2021-22. So when we do the 2020 budget, we look at what's in 2020-21, what we said in the 2019 budget, what you'll get for that year. And then we say that the reduction. But if you compare it against the allocation that you got the previous financial year, it still grows. And that's the point that we're trying to make. So it's what we indicate that you're going to get and what you get in reality. But it's there's still a growth up in that allocation. Gone through in quite a bit of detail. If you don't have a funded budget,
and those were the people that are at our disposal to fix that. But the more the interest rate grows and the debt grows, the more the expenditure is going to be aligned to that. So we do need to get that interest expenditure under control. Because in the end of the day, that's been crippling.
Commissioner, I know you've got two eye on office two for time. I'm staying on for tomorrow's public hearing. There were quite a few very specific questions where members wanted specific numbers. I could provide those tomorrow morning in a more relaxed time frame, if that's going to be better, or we can try and hurry through them now.
Maybe.